Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a sign of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let me lie. Feline, with a death wish. Right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Welcome to the show. And we'll start with this. Had anyone ever seen a Ben Gamel at bat before? Until yesterday? Sean, have you ever seen Ben Gamel take a hack at the plate before?
I didn't even know what he looked like until he walked up to the box.
That man, when he's not raking for the Astros, oh, look at all the tattoos.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that stood out yesterday. Him, apparently, you put on an Astros uniform and he's like Tony Gwynn. And he's got a lot of tattoos. So Ben Gamel, one of the stars of the night last night as the Astros beat the Orioles. And, of course, Yordan was on the road, so he got an RBI. That's great. We love a Yordan Alvarez on the road. One of the premier players in baseball. When he puts on the Astros grays. And the Space City home blues or the traditional whites, a little less than that, but that was not the case yesterday. The Astros win 6-0. And Spencer Arrighetti got the job done. Bounced back from a subpar performance against what is a really good lineup. He got smoked by the White Sox. Goes into Baltimore. Does what pretty much all what the Astros have done all year long to the Orioles, dominate them. That's a weird thing. The Orioles have been team next for now maybe a season and three quarters or four fifths now. They were team next last year. They're team next this year. And at least this year, the Astros are saying we're team now. And it's an Astros team who's a lot different from the teams we've seen in the past, but when it comes to the Orioles, it apparently doesn't matter. The Astros uniform goes on, the Orioles take a beating, and that has been the case this year as they win another one, this time in Baltimore. So 5.5 games up, and as a result, or at least partly because of what they've done to widen their lead over the Mariners, Scott Service is gone. A lot of people were saying, thank you for your service, Scott Service, making that joke, and also not Yeah, I know, Sean. Not a good one by the people, but they were doing it. And also, they were saying he was a double agent because he used to be an Astro. For whatever reason, people had the time to go Google Scott Service as an Astro and find pictures and go, he did that. He's doing this for us. And now, with the 5.5 game lead, the Mariners lose their manager. And you think about this. The Mariners were in position to make the playoffs last year until they coughed it up down the stretch. They had a 10-game lead in the division this year, and that wilted away rather quickly. And now we're talking about a 15.5-game turnaround since that point, and Scott Service had to go. He's a curmudgeon. I didn't mind him because at least it gave us in the division that until last year, well, even then the Astros won it, but it was a division not filled with a lot of drama. We would win the division. The other teams weren't very good. And then the Rangers snuck up and went on to win the World Series. But Scott Service, he would throw a couple punches at the Astros every now and again. And it made for, at least we're playing the Mariners and we hate Scott Service. Now, they're just the Mariners and whatever. There's nothing there. They had a nice couple months and they're back to being what they have been for the majority of the Astros run. Just a little less color as far as the rivalry now that Scott Service is gone. So he loses his job and Joe Espada. Now the discussion is, I don't even know if it's a serious one. Can Joe Espada sneak his way into a real conversation about manager of the year? If we're going by who we thought would be on the roster consistently throughout the year and what it actually became. But this is my issue before I just automatically say he's done a great job. Baseball is the one sport where the manager, coach, whatever you want to call it, feels like he's more at the whims of his players. Like, you can't, sure, your players have to play well in all sports, but a football coach, a head coach, can devise a scheme. He can put the players in positions. He can out-coach the other coach. Is Joe Espada out-coaching the Orioles? Or is he throwing a lineup out there and the lineup is winning and the pitcher's putting on a good performance? I don't know. Is he a great motivator? We heard early he wasn't a good communicator from unnamed prominent Astros. Maybe one with the bad elbow. Although that could mean any pitcher. I meant the guy with the bad elbow who hits for the Astros. How do we figure out if Joe Espada has done a great job this year? Because the team's winning. The team was winning with Dusty Baker, and everyone said last year Dusty Baker was screwing it up.
Yeah, and they're probably going to be worse than they were last year. At least, maybe not probably. There's a chance that they win less games than they did last year. I think they have to, it was something like 20-12 to get to 90 wins, which is what they had last year. So I think that's really what is going to be the one that holds them back from winning AL Manager of the Year. It's just the fact that it's the Astros and they won the division last year. It's a little bit like NFL Coach of the Year, NBA Coach of the Year, where it's going to go to, well, didn't think this team was going to be good. Now look at you.
There's a narrative-based thing for this type of award.
It'll be Cleveland. It'll be Kansas City. It'll be one of whoever the managers of those teams are.
Despite the context of Joe Espada having a roster decimated by injuries, it's still the Astros. And now we're getting it was beginning in the last month or so, but now it's even more the inevitable Astros. This was always going to happen no matter who was available day to day. So
the Astros are back.
There it is. Well, let's get to it's not the entire clip, because that's Spencer Arrighetti with Ken Rosenthal after his performance. Six innings scoreless for Spencer Arrighetti. He was with Rosenthal on Fox, and it was a longer post-game interview, but of course that's the line that everyone's pulled and put in their tweets and talking about. The rookie talking about the Astros being back. We hope it's not a Texas being back thing. That generally doesn't go well. Texas decided not to say that, and look at them. Now they are a contender once again for the national title. But Spencer Arrighetti talking to Ken Rosenthal after his performance yesterday.
What have you learned about this club just being around them?
There's no quit in that whole clubhouse. I mean, there's never been a moment where there was panic. I mean, regardless of what the record was saying, regardless of where we were at in the division, everybody showed up and worked every single day. And it's taken a lot to get to this point. I mean, I myself had to come a long way. And I know there's other guys that have continually grinded to put themselves in a position to help us win more often. And I'm just thankful for the guys in the clubhouse who have helped keep me sane, keep me working as efficient, as hard as I have always. And I think the Astros are back. Yeah.
Spencer, it's always good to be sane. Congratulations. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
I understand the sentiment. You were bad early. You're really good now. But usually that comes with a team having a lack of success for, let's say, more than 3 months. When you say it's back, that's where the Texas thing comes from. Well, I'm harping on Texas, but anytime a team with big brand name recognition has a downturn and they have a turnaround, those things start being said, particularly in college football. If you were bad for 2.5 months, does it fit? Like, you guys didn't really go anywhere. You didn't really go anywhere. I appreciate it, Spencer Arrighetti, but Altuve is like, but it does fly in the face of we know we're good. We'll turn it around. I don't look. It's a great line. It'll rule Twitter for a day. But the Astros hadn't really gone anywhere.
The Astros are back.
Yeah, thanks. I know.
I could use a little bit more, oomph.
Yeah, to be fair, that's another thing. If you're like Sam Ehlinger was like, "We're back." Joe Tessitore, when Texas beat Notre Dame in that early bowl game.
Texas is back, folks.
There it is. He put some oomph into some sauce into that.
98 miles per hour.
Yeah. This is like, is it a slurve? What is that?
The Astros are back.
Got it.
Yeah. That's a Uncle Charlie.
It's someone cosplaying a guy who would really say that and be cool about it. Like, I appreciate you, Rook. But you ain't Joe Tessitore.
Yeah.
You ain't Sam Ehlinger, would it?
I really wish that Carlos Correa could be back on the Astros, because he's the one that I want saying that line.
Yeah.
He would have put the proper amount of stank on it.
Even Bregman's, they asked what would happen if the Astros didn't win the division. I guess we'll never know.
Yeah.
Bregman's got a little sauce.
He also, no disrespect to Spencer Arrighetti, he also kind of has the pelts on the wall to do that.
Yeah, that's why.
Was Spencer Arrighetti on the Astros when, like, at the beginning of the season? He wasn't.
No, he was down with the, was it the Space Cowboys, right?
Yeah, he was down with the Space Cowboys.
So when the Astros were bad, how much of that did you have to suffer through? Now, he's had a lot of starts. He's been up with the big club a long time.
Yeah, but he probably was around, because I was thinking of the 7-19 number that I've seen so much, and he was on the team.
Yeah, his first start was pretty early.
Yeah,
so he did go through his first start. So he did go through a lot. He's had to deal with it, but we got to get a little bit more juice from our guy.
Yeah, and I do agree that you need to be in the wilderness a little bit longer.
It's been like 2.5 months they were scrambling trying to figure out how good they were going to be. They're back, though.
Or it needs to be at the the Alex Bregman thing, after you already clinched the division, you know?
Yeah.
Say what you want about Sam Ehlinger. He said it after they beat Georgia.
They did win a bowl game.
He didn't say it at a pretty big spot when the season was already over.
Yeah, when Bevo nearly killed Ugga. A lot of things are going Texas' way that day, that night. Yeah, Spencer Arrighetti's first start was in Kansas City. It was a bad one. He finished with an ERA of 21 after he went 3 innings and gave up 7 runs.
I was going to say. April 10th. That's bad because I can very easily do
figure
the math.
Out how that how he got there. Yeah. Yeah, April 10th. So he's been around a long time. So he can say I went through the bad times.
Yeah, he can. Shout out to Spencer Arrighetti. I
appreciate the performance last night as well. And the quote that people will use to rip you if it doesn't go well the rest of the way, or say that's the line of the season.
The Astros are back.
We're going to need some more production value from Spencer. It's cool. A little more.
Do you think Ken Rosenthal was like, can you give it to us one more time?
No, I bet the Astros social team would have asked
if
he had done it. So there it is. The Astros are back. If they had gone anywhere in the first place, up 5.5 on the Mariners and got the Mariners manager fired. Scott Service no longer the head man, at least from day to day, on the field for the Mariners. So all in all, if you like guys getting fired and you didn't like Scott Service, a very positive night. We will get to a question that kind of surfaced on the morning show regarding the Rockets. It's a story I talked about but didn't really get deep into on this show. The six teams expected to have a big turnaround in the NBA. This upcoming season, the Rockets are mentioned, and it sparked a debate about how good can they actually be. And what does it actually take to be a playoff team in the NBA? There's not like an all-out qualifier that says if you have this, you're going to make the playoffs. But from going through at least last year's playoff standings, particularly the top six, it kind of shows what type of player you need. And the question is, do the Rockets have this player? We'll talk about that, and we'll get to Jerry when we come back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Kane is in the building.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Let's get to Jerry, and if we have time in the segment, because, of course, we went way long. In the previous one, we will get to the Rockets discussion. Maybe we stick with some Texans sound. That might be quicker. And also, Jerry, since you're calling in, let me ask you this before we get to the Astros. Jerry, are you a college football fan? Do you have a college football team that you root for?
I am a college football fan. Graduated from the best school in the state of Texas, the University of Houston.
Okay.
So I do watch college football. I even got a parlay. And, you know, I hate League Zero because it's only four games, but I got Hawaii, New Mexico, Georgia Tech beating Florida State, and SMU Ooh. Winning at Nevada.
Okay.
And you let me know how that parlay goes, because I got about a couple hundreds on those, and I'm not too happy about it. But anyways, I already picked it. Quick question about the Astros. I got to give my props to Dana, or Dana, whatever his name is. I got to give my props to him, because he found Gamble. He was able to bring back Neris. And just watching the game yesterday, I don't think the Astros hit a home run because I was in and out doing some stuff. But watching the game, I was just, you know, Jake Myers with that bunt, that was just a beautiful bunt. And they won with small ball because Baltimore's field is just, left field is just massive. And anyways, that's just, I don't know what you say about my parlay. Have a safe trip in Florida, and I'll catch you later.
I appreciate it, Jerry. We can't talk about the parlay because, as you mentioned, I won't be here. I like taking a shot. And Florida State has a lot of turnover. So how good are they? Is that top 10 ranking something they're worthy of? They're going to have a pretty good defensive front. That's a lot of transfers in their secondary. Marvin Jones Jr. He's not a secondary guy. He's a defensive end of Florida State legacy. He played at Georgia. They have Earl Little. Who played at Miami, the father, he is in their secondary. He transferred from Alabama. So they have plenty of SEC transfers to try to make up for some of the losses. But it's a weird setting. It's in Ireland, and Georgia Tech is improved. I just want to see the composition of that Florida State team, because it's going to be very different from the team you remember, particularly at quarterback. That's where you start with DJU versus Jordan Travis. So it's an interesting one to open, although you just hear Georgia Tech, Florida State. It's like, okay, why do they have to be playing in Ireland? Why are we punishing the people of Ireland with this game? I think it could be more interesting than people think, mostly because of some of the uncertainty with how Florida State's going to coalesce in the first game, as this roster's had a lot of turnover. As far as the Astros, yeah, credit Dana Brown. I think Sean was going to jump in. We'll get to the college football stuff. Credit him for he finds guys, and we'll see how Hector Neris does when he gets out there. But he's had to either pull guys off waivers or guys off the street, or just raid his own minor league system to find guys who can contribute. And there's been some fits and starts, but he's found a way to piece it all together. And thanks to the help of the Mariners not being great, and now the Astros obviously playing really good baseball, they have a comfortable lead in AOS. It's no longer something we're even really worried about. It's more, can we catch the leaders in the AL? Sean, did you want to jump in on the college football stuff?
New Mexico is going to be the one that sinks that
ruins this parlay.
Yeah, okay. They're 13.5-point underdogs to Montana State.
Yeah. Never
underestimate. Game one for Bronco Mendenhall. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, never underestimate the really good FCS school against the average to poor FBS school in the first game of the year.
Yeah. It's
a bad spot.
Like the other picks, but that Montana State's probably going to beat them.
Yeah, it's just a tough spot for a new new team with at least new head coach with the team, and you got Montana State who's pretty good. Good luck. I hope it goes well for you. Don't have a MyBookie spot here. we could lead right into it. I do have an Aqueduct Plumbing to talk about. But we will get to the Rockets stuff when we come back. And we'll get into some sound from the Texans and their joint practice they had with the Rams. We know this offseason we found out CJ Stroud's a big fan of Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford's a big fan of CJ Stroud. In fact, he talked about a play from the preseason that he watched and went over to CJ and credited him for the throw. So apparently Matthew Stafford's a ball knower and a ball watcher, that he's watching Texans preseason games against the Steelers and going, you know what? I love that throw. I'm going to talk to CJ about it. So we'll get to that when we come back. But first, I did want to talk about Aqueduct Plumbing Company. I actually resurfaced my bathtub yesterday. Billy Brown doesn't do that. But if I had a leak with that bathtub, he would be someone I would call. You can go to aqueductplumbingcompany.com and check out all the services that Billy Brown and his company provide. So whether you have a leak or you have major damage to pipes, they take care of it all. The repiping, such a big thing, particularly if you have never done any work on your pipes and you're starting to notice some weird smelling, weird coloration of your water, it could be time to get those looked at. And if you just want the free price quote, call them, 281-488-6238. That's 281-488-6238. And they'll come out and check. They'll work it out for you. So maybe it's just a minor problem, but if it's a big problem, you want to be preventative, and that's what Aqueduct Plumbing Company can do for you. They have experienced contractors who are local. They are there to help out the local customer, and not just experience, they're great at what they do. So remember, leaks, you have a faulty water heater. All of that can be taken care of from Aqueduct Plumbing Company. 281-488-6238, 281-488-6238, or go to aqueductplumbingcompany.com.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Coming up here shortly, I'll give you a chance to win some tickets. We had a guy with a Jerry with a parlay for college football. Well, I don't have a parlay for you, but in a matter of minutes, when we're going to give you a chance to go see the Cougs play in their home opener and the first game of the Willie Fritz era as the Cougs get started. They won't get started on Saturday, but tomorrow they are going to start. During week one, week zero is here, and Jerry kind of laid out the game for us, so we didn't have to. Okay, so I did want to get to this, though, because it sparked a pretty long discussion earlier today, and I want to get Sean's opinion on this as well. So SB Nation has an article talking about six teams who will be way better this year in the NBA than they were last year. The teams are the Grizzlies. You can kind of figure out what that is. They were injury riddled. Ja Morant was suspended for the first 25 games. So when that team is at full health, they have been a top four seed in the West. Now they don't have Dylan Brooks anymore. They don't have Steven Adams. Those two happen to be in Houston, but they still have Ja, Jaren Jackson, Desmond Bane, and others. So the Sixers are there. Big acquisition of Paul George, and you have to hope that Joel Embiid is going to be healthy, which should be something you don't depend on because he's never healthy, but they've made a giant acquisition and also added other pieces. The Kings have added DeMar DeRozan, and they won 46 games last year. I'm not sure how many more games DeMar DeRozan is going to help the Kings win, but they've been a solid team over the last couple years. The Knicks, they were a two seed, so a lot of this isn't just about record. This is about do they go from a nice story to a real contender? And the Knicks have added another Villanova guy and Mikal Bridges. And the Rockets, of course. The Rockets won 41 games last year. Had a big month of March that coincided with Jalen Green's big month of March to in fact, be multiple games over 500 until they went on a relatively long losing streak, and then they bounced back against teams who had nothing to play for, and the Rockets got to 41-41. So I was looking at the records of the teams ahead of them last year, and for the most part, even if you go east and west, the only team who didn't have a top 20 player on their roster was the Magic. Now, I guess it all depends on what you think of Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner, but I don't think anyone would put them in the top 20s, because you're talking about if there was a fourth team All-NBA, that would be where the top 20 would reside. So the Rockets don't have an All-NBA player. Jalen Green played like one in the month of March, and that's why they went on that winning streak. If they don't have a top 20 player or one that plays like one throughout the year, do they make the playoffs? That's what we're talking about here. Whether you want to say they're the top 8 or the top 10 when it comes to the play-in, or maybe they're top 6 where they don't even have to worry about it. At least last year it says no, they don't make it. You have to have at least one, and in some cases, teams who were real contenders had multiple top 20 players. So that's where the discussion went. Lance is high on this Rockets team. He likes the young talent, and I wouldn't disagree. He made a comp to the Warriors, and I kind of pushed back. I said the Warriors had struggled in the playoffs for multiple years before all those guys hit their prime, and then they fired Mark Jackson, Steve Kerr came along, and the rest is history. So I wouldn't comp them to the Warriors just yet. So I'll ask you this, Sean. Can the Rockets make the playoffs if they don't have a top 20 player on the roster this year?
By make the playoffs, you mean play a 7-game series?
You know what? I'll open it up, because even some of the play-in teams have top 20 players. Like when Zion's healthy, of course, once again, a guy who's never healthy, he's a top 20 player. On the Kings, would you put De'Aaron Fox there? It's debatable, but he can be in that realm too. So I'll say let's say the old school playoffs, top 8,
which means
at minimum you're hosting a home game in the play-in.
Yeah.
Can they get there without a top 20 player?
I think it's possible that they can get there without a top 20 player, and it's more of the model of just having a lot of depth and having a lot of guys that can not go off, but a lot of guys that can have good nights on any given game, where the you look at the Rockets, and for some teams, I mean, for the Rockets, a couple years ago, it was a bad thing that the starters and the bench, there really isn't that big of a drop-off between talent. Now it's kind of a good thing that there's not a lot of drop-off between, you know, if Dylan Brooks is on the court and if Tari Eason's on the court, or if Jalen Green is on the court and Cam Whitmore or Amin Thompson is on the court. There's not that big of a drop-off between who's starting and who is coming in off the bench for them. So that's really the way they can get there. Even if you're telling me that these guys don't, you know, either Shingun or Green or, I guess, Thompson or Smith, they don't make that next step into being a top 20 player, is that they just the overall depth and these guys taking small steps but not big enough to get there. That, especially in the Western Conference, where you look at the bottom of the Western Conference playoffs last year, it's a lot of really old teams. It's a lot of teams that you think are making a step back. So you have the Warriors, who beat out the Rockets for that
final play-in.
Yeah, the 10th seed. You have the Lakers that were, I believe, the 8th seed, maybe the 7.
They were 7 because the Pelicans were falling. Actually, the Pelicans had the better record. The Lakers went on the road and beat them.
Yes. Yeah. You have the Suns that were a 6th seed. So you have a lot of teams that are the arrows pointing down on them, where the Rockets, again, even if you're saying that they do not make some huge star leap, one of these guys, is that the idea is they can just be healthier, can be playing harder, and are much deeper, which allows them really to play much harder because you're not worried about having to go 40 minutes a night. So I think with all those factors, even if you're saying that they can't make a leap, I still think there's a path for them to make the playoffs.
The thing about that month of March is Jalen Green was playing like a top 10 to 15 player in the world.
Yes.
It was only for that month of during the year, but there isn't any coincidence. I think it's more of a coincidence that Shagun was unhealthy and unavailable when they were going on the run. I think that's a coincidence. But the one thing I would say is there's some correlation is Jalen Green was playing like a top 10 or 15 player in the world, and then they went on their winning streak. Mm-hmm. So I agree with a lot of what you're saying, because maybe they just get by through depth and just their ability to be deeper than some of these other teams. But they would have had a rather, let's say, disappointing year if Jalen Green doesn't have the month that he has. And, of course, some of it partly has to do with Shingun being hurt. So I think one of their guys, maybe not top 15, but we're talking about, okay, he's clearly an all-star.
Yeah, I think Shingun was pretty close to having an actual all-star case last year. And I think part of that is because he's in the West and not the East, so making the playoffs is, or making the playoffs, and also making the all-star teams just way harder in the West. But I think I kind of expect Shingun to either be an all-star or be an all-star if we're not having kind of legacy picks in the all-star game, which happens from time to time. I get it. It's the all-star game. But if they're, you know, with the voting and stuff where it's like, yeah, Kevin Durant is an all-star this year, but honestly, if you're playing game tomorrow, I'm not sure who's actually you'd pick or who is having a better season, him or Shingun. So I think there's a chance for that kind of thing where he's not an all-star. He doesn't actually make the all-star team, but we look at his numbers. We're like, this is clearly an all-star player.
Yeah. If he's probably in that Sabonis realm.
Sabonis, Markkanen.
Yeah, where you're like, where you could take one to the other and go, all-star or not all-star. There's not a lot of difference between them.
Basically, the last couple of years, either Sabonis or Markkanen makes the all-star team.
Yeah. And Shingun probably will be in that mix as long as health is not a factor for him. So it did drive an entire maybe segment. It was a segment probably because of how that show goes, probably 15 minutes or so talking about it. And I had to go through the standings. And I saw it as far as how these teams are put together. The Rockets are not as top heavy, but they're deeper. But I think one of their guys, whoever it might be, I don't really care who it is, needs to emerge for this 41-win team who you can maybe pick apart how they got there, although we know they believe they tricked off some games. Though it was their words, not mine. Yep. They believe they tricked off some games, so they think maybe they're a 45-46-win team. I would say you went on a giant winning streak in a month. Can we see maybe not the extremes throughout the year? And maybe you balance out at 46, 47 wins, and that's enough to make the play-in. And depending on a couple breaks, maybe gets you into a top six seed, although 49 was the mark last year. Okay.
Yeah. But last year was in the West.
It was nuts.
It was a crazy year. It's 41 nuts. Gets you in the play-in every other year of the play-in.
Yeah, true. And now you talk about some of the teams who may take a step back. You mentioned a couple because of age. You've got the Clippers as well.
That's who I
forgot. Who no longer have Paul George. They have Kawhi, who you can't count on his availability. And of course, you got James Harden, who just got paid. Yeah. So,
and to be fair, Memphis is probably
this is take that one was the spots. One team that you could say if you're pointing to who's going to maybe take a spot away. If the Clippers are going to fall back, who may be jumping up? It'd be Memphis, who was mentioned in the article. They have a lot of talent, and they were just either suspended or healthy throughout last year. So that's one of the teams to take into account if you're talking about a Rockets leap up the standings. Okay, when we come back, we'll hear from some Texans. In fact, we will hear from, I won't call them their opponent this week because it was just joint practices, but they're going to play the Rams, and we're going to hear from one of C.J. Stroud's favorite quarterbacks, Matthew Stafford, about C.J. Stroud. And we'll also get into something, I don't know if it's something that's being said and now it's a slogan, or everyone's coming to this particular train of thought organically. The Texans have multiple players have said, I think it's even been said by either the coaches or Casario, about some guys just don't fit to be Houston Texans. We'll talk about that when we come back. But first, let's talk about MyBookie. We have Jerry with his parlay. If you are interested in some multi-sport, or maybe you want to stick with college football, either way, you can drop those parlays on MyBookie. Just go to MyBookie.ag for that. And you know what they say. You can bet on anything. And you just go to the website right now, and they'll show you what they're featuring, whether it be college football coming up tomorrow. The NFL, obviously you can bet on preseason games tonight if you're a sicko and want to do that. Major League Baseball, all of it. The PGA, who's going to win the presidency? All those things are available on MyBookie. That's why they say bet on anything, anywhere, anytime. So if you go to the website and use the promo code BET975, if you're just signing up or if you want, are an existing customer returning, use that promo code to make your money go further. So they got the sports betting. They've got the live casino. They got everything you want to make the action even more fun. Remember, MyBookie.ag is the website. Bet on anything, anywhere, anytime with MyBookie.
ESPN 97.5. Now.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios is the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
So the Rams and Texans had a joint practice yesterday. Matthew Stafford in town. One of CJ's favorite quarterbacks. He talked about him earlier this offseason. About when I think he was just ranking quarterbacks on a podcast, and Matthew Stafford came up. And Matthew Stafford is a bit, for at least still, I guess it's because of the Detroit thing, it's still a surprising name for people when they hear people ranking top quarterbacks and he pops up. It's all about playing for the Lions. Clearly a lack of success, but you go to L.A. and win a Super Bowl, things change. But he's always been a good player. It just changes. You get that ring on your finger and people feel differently about you, just like a wife. An engaged woman, you get a ring on your finger, people look at you differently. Matthew Stafford.
Stafford's both those things.
Well, he's not a wife. But he is a married man, and he does have another ring, too. He wasn't at the center of it, but his wife was when she told the story about how she used his backup at Georgia to make him jealous. And Matthew Stafford was dirty macking, saying he's not good for you after not committing to Kelly. I know people latched on to her part of it, but I'm still on. If whatever you think is going on with the girl, whatever you think that's going on, she picked me. And maybe I'm just a short-timer, a part-timer here, but don't sit in my girl's car and tell her that I'm not good for it.
I know I'm the backup and you're the start.
I get all of that. I get it. She may be using me. I may have gone in with a little naivete, but now my eyes are open. I get what she's doing, but we're bros. Or maybe even if we're not bros, we're teammates. Don't sit in her car and tell her I'm not good. I'm not good for her. She picked me, bro. You wait your turn. Not that it's a turn-taking thing, but you get what I'm saying. Get what I'm saying. Everyone talking about Kelly Stafford. Matt Stafford got off light. It turns out it wasn't the guy everyone thought it was. I think it might have been Logan something, or maybe it was Tereshinsky, one of those guys. It wasn't Joe Cox, who everyone thought it was. If Joe Cox had to come out and go, actually, it's not me, guys. The woman I was with in college, I'm still with her. We're married with kids. It wasn't her. It wasn't me. Someone should have punched Matt Stafford in the face for that. Just saying. But that's years ago. The Matt Stafford we know today is a Super Bowl winner, and he's a giant fan of C.J. Stroud. Here's Matt Stafford talking glowingly about our quarterback, C.J. Stroud.
I'm a huge fan of watching him play. Throws the ball with ease, plays with like a really calm aggression, which I like. You know, his first touchdown to Tank Dell, letter of the law in the preseason this year. You know, that's buzz coverage right into a dagger window, usually not throwing that ball, but hey, they didn't play it as well as they could, and he fit it in there for a touchdown. I mean, that's playing ball in an aggressive way, but smart, and I'll let him know that. I thought it was a pretty sweet play. So, you know, he plays at a really high level, especially for a young kid. They've got a lot of talent around him, which is a lot of fun to watch, and he does a great job of getting those guys the ball.
Matt Stafford picking out one play from a preseason game and knowing it back to front, that guy watches ball. He likes watching ball, even in preseason. Yeah. Even in preseason, he's going to know things. He's going to he's going to see throws and talk about them. So that's nice because we know CJ likes him quite a bit.
Do you think Matt Stafford only watched the CJ throws? Do you think once he saw Davis Mills go in there, he was like,
oh, I thought you were going to say, did he hang around for the Justin Fields throws?
He probably had to dodge them.
Yeah, CJ only had the two drives. As soon as CJ was out, do you think he turned the game off?
I think so.
Probably. I don't think he was hanging around. Well,
maybe if they're having joint practices, because I imagine this is why he looked at the CJ stuff, is they have joint practices.
So you want make
some small talk?
You think he was prepping himself to have a conversation with the other quarterback? Like, I just need to know some things.
Yeah,
just do a little research. Know some things about
Tim Boyle.
Bring it up.
What do I bring? Because I think him and Case Keenum, they could probably talk about.
Of course, they've been around
38
so long.
Years old.
Yeah.
I don't know what him and
CJ have to talk about.
Or him and Davis Mills or Tim Boyle have to talk
about. I like the idea of Matt Stafford doing a little prep work.
Just being like, hey, I know I have to make some small talk.
It's like when, well, I don't know if all hosts do it, but it's like when you've got a guest coming on, you just do a little work. Just set yourself up to have a smooth intro and have a conversation and then get to whatever you need to get to. I like it. Yeah. Matthew Stafford, always prepared for guys who are worth it.
Oh, no. I think he prepares for the guys that aren't worth it.
You think he does it all the time? He's always got a little nugget to have a start a conversation
off
with people?
I think so. Because how else would he start a conversation with Tim Boyle? He can't talk about anything with him.
Hey, man, that MetLife Field turf, right, man? Because Tim Boyle's in New York. It's tough, right?
Okay, so now I'm picturing Matt Stafford going down the line a lot like the Key and Peele Obama sketch. And it's C.J. Stroud, like, great throw, the buzzer out, right, whatever. Davis Mills picks out some other play. Case Keenum, he's like, man, it's crazy. We're still in the NFL, right? And then, remember the old Big 12? That was awesome. And then he gets to Tim Boyle, and he's like, man,
Met
hot.
Life.
It's hot out here, huh?
It's scorching. How do you deal with it?
This weather.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I
see any good shows lately, Tim? What'd you think of the House of the Dragon finale?
I don't know. I'm going to say Matt Stafford has never watched that show.
Ooh.
I'm going to put him on Severance, the Apple TV show with, what's his name? I can't remember the guy's first name. You were recognizing
Adam guys. Scott.
Adam Scott. There it is.
I'm
putting Matt Stafford on Severance. He's watched Severance.
I think he's a Yellowstone guy.
I think he is a country guy.
Him and Kelly are like, yeah, we just love. Every night, him and Kelly have to agree on something to watch. And, you know, he can't just be watching CJ Stroud preseason throws. And it's like, okay, to decompress, spend some time with my wife. We just buzz through Yellowstone.
Well, he's a Texas guy. He went to Highland Park. So
teammates with Clayton Kershaw, if you didn't know.
It's a story I've heard quite a bit.
Really?
Yes. Oddly enough, I've heard that story quite a bit. So, Yellowstone would probably fit.
Ozarks?
I don't know. I'm sure there's a story about what Matt Stafford watches. We didn't do the work that he did to prep for this. We have not.
Matt Stafford's streaming picks.
At some point, that's going to come up. I'm sure it probably came up at a Super Bowl. Hey, Matt, some non-sports person asked him what he watches.
Hey, what do you think about Ted Lasso or whatever?
Something like that. And Matt Stafford's like, I don't really watch TV.
Actually, what's more likely is at the Super Bowl, it's Jason Sudeikis dressed up as Ted Lasso.
Maybe. Asked him the question. Yeah. It was in L.A. It's very true. Okay, let's get to this before we go to break. This is something that's popped up quite a bit this offseason. A lot of Texans and coaches, and maybe even Nick Caserio has said it, there is a particular standard to being a Texan now. And it's different from that Texans worthy thing that was mostly about, hey, don't get in trouble with the law. This is apparently something about how you practice, how you play. You got to be tough. You got to be of a strong will. And if not, you don't fit in. Here's Laremy Tunsil. He echoed the sentiments that others have said about how it's not for everybody.
Not everybody can play for this system. Hunter D'Amico, I mean, we come out every day, we work hard, and you're going to get the reps. Tough-nosed football, you know what I mean? If you're not built for that, don't come this way.
Do you think that is something organic that the players have figured out amongst themselves, or do you think someone is saying, not everyone can play here? If you ain't tough enough, go. And that's been a tagline for some coach, some front office person, and it's filtered down. Because it's been said several times that the way the Texans do thing ain't for everybody.
I think it's a talking point. I think it's a D'Amico Ryan's talking
I think it is.
Point. And it doesn't even have to be a Brian Flores drill sergeant type of way. It could be a hey, not everyone's built for it, but Nick and I, we selected all because we think you are built for
it. Yeah, it could be coming from a positive thing that
it's not Brian Flores being like, you suck.
Yeah, you're not built for it. Yeah. Someone else should
Damian
be in
Pierce,
your spot.
You're not built for being a Texan.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how many carries he gets against the Rams and what it might mean for Damian Pierce's future. But I think you're right. I feel like it's something that has been said, but in a way that suggests that you guys are built for it. That's why you're here. And it's unique to be a Texan. Not everyone can play here. You guys are worthy of putting on that Toro logo.
You're worthy to throw up the H.
Yeah. You see that owner up there with the mustache? You're worthy to play for him. He's not just an owner. He's a grill master, too.
Yeah.
That happened this week, too.
Small flag on the play with Laremy Tunsil.
What's your issue?
We all come out here every day.
That's true.
Laremy Tunsil.
To be fair to him, we've talked about it, his lack of availability for practice. He was coming off an offseason scope on his knee.
Okay.
So there is a reason why he's not practicing as much. Why he's not playing in games, he's just a premier left tackle they don't have to play.
I was going to say, not to turn the sands of time all the way back, but was it 21? I forgot if it was 21 or 22. One of the forgotten years. Thumb injury in October just took him out the rest of the season. All right.
Well, I got to come back for you guys. Right. It's better off if I don't come back. You want that draft pick, right?
Yeah.
Now
it worked out perfectly. They got the number 2 pick,
and it worked out. No, it was 2021.
It must have been 2021.
So it was the year after.
Got the number 3 pick. Worked out perfectly. They would have won an extra game. They'd be stuck with Sauce Gardner instead of Derek Stingley.
Yeah. And Daniel Jones's day would have been ruined. Although Sauce
probably equally as ruined.
Yes. I don't know. Sauce isn't known for the type of ball skills that Derek Stingley has, but the way Daniel Jones was throwing the football, Sauce would have had an easy day.
Sauce, because Giants and Jets are having joint practices, and they asked Sauce what he thinks of Daniel Jones?
I did. He had to come out on Twitter and try to clean it up. In fact, since you brought it up,
I'll find it, and then
we'll watch. We'll read Sauce's cleanup of that matter. Speaking of Sauce on Twitter, before we go, he was showing a room in his house that he's going to put what evidently is a golf simulator. He goes, "Hey, what do you guys think I'm going to put in this room?" And some woman, I think it was a Bills fan, said something along the lines of clips of you holding and grabbing receivers. And Sauce quote tweeted it, which is, I don't know if that's fair play when you have the type of following he does, and he's quoting a random Bills fan. He quote tweeted the woman and said, "Does your husband know you sent me your OnlyFans link?" And as you might imagine, her Twitter blew up. She wasn't expecting that type of smoke. I don't know if Sauce has apologized for that, like the way he apologized to Daniel Jones. So we'll play what Sauce said about Daniel Jones when we come back. I gotta say, yes, she got after you, but you quote tweeted, you're opening her up for some less than chivalrous commentary from the regular NFL fan, particularly Jets fans who are just going to hate on anything a Bills fan has to say. So that wraps up hour one of the show. We have a story about Nick Saban and a man just being a football coach, no matter what's happening in his life. He's no longer coaching football. In fact, I think he's at Florida State practice as they get ready for Georgia Tech tomorrow. But there's a story dating back now over 20 years about Nick Saban and how he handles national tragedies when it comes to coaching his football team. We'll talk about that in hour two as well. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.